You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans, the podcast that takes you on a captivating journey into the heart of Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. Each episode, we delve into the rich history, vibrant culture, and hidden gems of this beautiful country. Through engaging conversations and personal anecdotes, we aim to bridge the gap between the Balkans and the rest of the world. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired, entertained, and connected.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
Today, I have a truly inspiring guest, Sheila Savanovic, a resilient lady from Micronesia who has made an extraordinary journey from the Eastern Pacific to Southeastern Europe. Sheila shares her fascinating story of meeting her husband in China, settling in Banja Luka, and the cultural adjustments she's had to make along the way, from learning the local language to living in this misunderstood country and experiencing some tough moments during her motherhood. Sheila's story is a testament to her adaptability and strength. So sit back with a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, relax, and get ready for an enlightening conversation that celebrates cultural diversity and personal strength. Okay, Sheila, let's start off. You're not from Banja Luka, you're not from the Balkans. In fact, you don't even come from Europe. Western, Northern or Eastern Europe. Where do you come from?
I come from Micronesia. Micronesia, Eastern Pacific.
The proper name is the Federated States of Micronesia, yes. Right? And it's in a massive ocean north of Papua New Guinea?
Yes, right above Papua New Guinea and Australia, right? Somewhere below the Philippines.
How the heck did you arrive here in Southeast Europe?
That was, I think, my calculations are right, 9 years ago, coming up 10 years actually. I studied in China, and that's where I met my husband, Vuk Savanovic. So we studied together in China, and we decided after 2 or 3 years, we decided to move to Banja Luka.
So this is now your home?
It's home now. You can never change your home, but once you settle down and you get roots, right now it's home.
As far as I'm aware, there's 600 islands in total, but only a few of the big ones. Which is the one that you class as home?
My dad is originally from the outer islands of Yap, whereas my mother is from, she's Chukis Pohnpeian. So that's like mainly, I'm from three of the islands in the Federated States of Micronesia.
These islands, individually, do they have their own languages?
Yes.
Do they have their own cultures?
They have totally different cultures. The lifestyle actually are just quite the same. But language and culture-wise, they're totally different. You can't compare. Yapi's language, Chukis language, and the Pohnpeian language, they are massively different. They have certain words that are similar, like coconut, everybody say nu, but everything else is totally different.
So your linguist abilities then is the language of your mother, the language of your father,
and
English and Serbian,
yes,
and Chinese, I take it.
I learned Chinese. I'm quite forgetting it, but if I practice some more, I'll get it. Yes, I learned Chinese for 2 years.
At what age did you end up leaving to go to China?
That's a really interesting story. 21, 22, right out of college. I graduated from the College of Micronesia. And during this time, this was in 2005, everybody was moving to the States. Okay, let's go to Hawaii. This is Micronesia. The Micronesian kids back home, they're all, let's go to Hawaii, Guam, the United States, let's go. That's where everybody was going. I was like, no, I want to try something different. I'm going to go east. So I decided to go to China. And going to China was really difficult for me because I come from a very modest background, I would say. Luckily, they just started a program from the Chinese government, started a program where they started inviting international students for a scholarship program, and that's where I decided, okay, I'm gonna apply, whatever comes. And thank God I passed everything. I was accepted, and then I just had to work for my funds, my ticket funds. I did that for 2 years. I collected enough funds, and then I paid my own ticket, and I went off to China.
So you bump in to this Bosnian guy. Tell us, without giving out too much of the love story away, what's yours?
My husband's name is Hulk. We were classmates, actually. We were, first day of class, we introduced ourselves. It was okay. And as the time passed by, we were actually best friends. We became best friends. We were inseparable. Like, we were just like buddies. We were like, yo, cute bro, hey sis. That was the beginning. That was the beginning of our our relationship. We were really quite good buddies.
So he was studying the same as you?
Yes, he came. He was also on the international program. And we were dorm mates, we were classmates, we were party mates. We were just hanging out together all the time. For 2 years, we were really good friends.
Some people have little problems, some have bigger problems. When you're from two different cultural backgrounds, it can be quite scary. Was it scary for you?
No. For me personally, no, it's not. I'm the kind of person that I would jump first before I think. I would jump into the water first and then look around me afterwards to check if there's sharks, metaphorically. No, it's not. Life is not supposed to be easy. We were not born easy way. No, everybody's born the hard ways. Personally, I think that's life. It's supposed to be hard. What matters more is how you accomplish your life, how you go about your life. But no, nothing. It was not difficult at all. The first day here, I was like, where the hell am I? It was snowy, it was dark. From Sarajevo to Banja Luka, we had to go around the mountains. I was like, oh my gosh, where am I? What have I gotten myself into? It was not really traumatic, but it was almost.
You drive through the dark, yeah. Through the snow, the sun comes up the next day, and?
I saw a lot of smokes. Smokes, literally all the houses were smoking. I was like, what are those? There's like chimneys. I'm like, you still use those here? And then my mother-in-law, father, none of them spoke English. Here I am, a pregnant woman from Micronesia. I didn't understand anything anybody was saying. You know how the Balkans talk, like it was at the beginning, it sounded so aggressive. And I was like, why are you guys fighting every day? I was like, no, we're not fighting. I was like, well, I'm sure. Like, but then I laughed my way through it. The first year here, I just laughed my way through everything.
You're listening to an Englishman in the Balkans.
Hi, and dobrodošli. My name is Ivana. And I'm the heart and soul behind the Balkan Sis podcast, coming to you all the way from beautiful Australia. As a former refugee, I've walked the path of resilience and transformation. My mission, to empower Balkan women and men to heal, thrive, and grow through my coaching and mentoring programs. Join me on this incredible journey of self-discovery, community, and belonging. Together, we'll rewrite our stories and move forward towards a brighter future. Balkan Sis Podcast, your source of authentic stories, inspiration, and wisdom. Ready to make a difference? Dive in and follow us today.
When did the language start to kick in? This aggressive, I don't know, I'll call it the former Serbo-Croatian. Watch the comments that come in when I said that. But yeah, when did that kick in?
I also call it Serbo-Croatian. When people ask me, do you speak Serbian? I was like, yes, I do. What else do you speak? I speak Serbian, I speak Croatian, I speak Bosnian, I speak whatever language you want to call it, but I speak Serbo-Croatian. Yes, I do. My mother-in-law, actually, to be honest, she taught me my Serbian. She, every day, she was like, I remember when I was a couple of months after arriving, we were sitting in the living room, she was knitting some clothes, and I was lying down, and then we just started counting away. She would say jedan, and I said jedan, dva, dva, and I would repeat after her. And I went after her, just repeating everything she said. And then whenever if she dropped something, she goes like mater, and I would say jeven mater, and then she would turn around and I was like chut. So I actually repeated everything that everybody said. Even, and then in our house, everybody curses. I think that's a normal thing here in the Balkans. Everybody just cursing away, whatever. And I say it along with them. I don't curse at all. I was raised in a very strict family. I don't curse at all. But as soon as I come here, I guess it's just a part of the language. So the first thing I learned were all the curses, every single curses that you can come into mind. I asked a lot of questions. What is that word? Why? Why do you call it this? Where does the word come from? I'm just naturally curious.
When you bring up children, and you said you came from a background where you don't curse, do you protect them from that, or have you just said you've just got to know it because you're going to grow up in the environment?
My boys, they don't curse at all. They know. I tell them what is bad, what I expect in my house. First of all, I tell them, it's my house. I lay down the rules, that's it. There's no cursing in my house. They're still young, they hear it every day, but then they will say, they would run to me and they would say, okay, Mama, Baba said this. Mama said, okay, they said it, but that doesn't mean you can say it. So they know. But at this age, they're almost 8 years old.
Are they trilingual?
They know Serbian perfectly. They understand English very well. They understand English. They speak English, but they don't know my Micronesian. They don't know any Micronesian language, which is sad. If you ask them, if they were here, and if you ask them where they're from, they'll tell you they're Micronesian. They're from Micronesia.
How do their friends, their school friends, react to that? They must be pretty special then when they go to school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They are, like, they are different. They have my hair. They have my skin color. They have, like, You can tell they're not from here. But I guess they grew up knowing that they were different. They grew up knowing they're different. And the good thing is, while growing up, we grew up in a neighborhood where everybody knows everybody. And that's the thing I like about Banja Luka. Everybody knows everybody. And it's still a tight-knitted community where, compared to other European countries, my neighbors can take watch my kids for the whole day. It's a neighborhood. It's still that neighborhood feeling. It's still that community-wise. How do I explain it? People are still down to earth. They're still, how do you say it? Open up. No, they still open your doors. Come in, drink coffee. Let's hang out. Whereas other bigger countries, it's just like my home, my house, like that.
Are these similarities to the Micronesian culture?
Yes, where Micronesia, it's a very tight-knitted community. My neighbor can just come into my house and get my salt. I'll bring it back. People go fishing together. When I say fishing, it's a very common thing back home, because when the community go fishing, they will come home with a lot of fish, and all this fish, they would share it to the community. They just take what they need for their home, and then all the other fish, they distribute it to the whole community, which is still, I guess that's why they have slava here.
Yeah, we've just gone through one, and yeah, it's right, you get given the, if I say doggy bag, people are going to get it wrong, but you get the bag of collard, you get the bag of meso and everything.
Yes, and that's one thing that still, sometimes it connects me to back home, because like how the lifestyle of living here, how people still think, the mentality is still so down to earth.
So you arrive, you've had the boys. The language is getting sorted out, even though most sentences start with a J word.
Yeah.
What was the next step after that? Was it, I've got to look for a job, or was it, I'm going to be a stay-at-home mum? What happened next?
After the boys... Okay, so the plan was... Okay, so when I... The plan was going back to China. That was the plan. We'll go back to China. Because during this time, China was stepping up in the world, economy-wise. Everything was so perfect in China. And finding a job there was also very easy for us, because we learned the language and we lived there for 3 years. So I guess that was the idea. But then we moved back, and then my husband, Wolf found, was working in Emtel. And this time Emtel was still at its high points. Like the pay was okay. So I was okay, let's... When the boys grow up a little bit, okay, we'll probably move back. But then when the boys turned 2 years old, I was okay, let's find a job. I can't just stay at home. I need to work something. And then I got pregnant again with I had my second pregnancy. Like, okay, another child, it's okay. It's good, the family's growing. I want a big family. I came from a big family, why not? But then I gave birth to my daughter, Catalaya, and then she went through a very difficult time after birth. She contracted Staphylococcus aureus from the hospital, which is also a problem here. Our hospitals here are not very, how to say, really good sterile-wise. So she got sepsis, which entered into her marrows, which developed into a very serious problem. It just shut down the function of her lungs, and then she went through a very bad stage. And then for 4 years, we were striving with her. She was on the ventilation for 4 years. So I was stuck in the home. She was very sick. Like, all of our daily lives were just around her. But then, sadly, she couldn't make it. She passed away in 2016.
After that?
Yeah, life goes on. Like I said, life is not supposed to be easy. Life wasn't meant to be easy. You have to live through the heart. You have to accomplish everything what you want, and you have to live through the hardships. It's how you come above them that makes your life special.
Now, back in Micronesia, families would rally around to same here?
Not really. Here... Family-wise, I see, like, it's a common thing for a lot of people to have like family issues. Everybody have family issues, but here you can see brother and sisters never talking. For ages they've never talked. They never talk. I have the same problem in my family. Here, my in-laws don't talk to their brothers, their siblings. They don't see each other for years. But then with Takleyas, most of the family members, they came by and they were there. But it was my friends that actually helped me through that. My girlfriends, they're crazy bees. My girlfriends, they took me out of it. But that's one thing I wanted to share. In Micronesia, after, let's say, the death of a family member, the first thing you do is you sing for 40 days, 40 straight days. People will come every night. They would sing, pass out cookie breads and coffees and donuts, and they will just hang around and just sing. Singing is a very personal activity back home. You just sing every time. We just sing in bad and good times. So here, when after my daughter's burial, we came back home, and I took out my guitar and I started singing.
Now that must have been a shock.
Everyone's like, "What's going on?" I'm just like, "Oh, just drink coffee," and I just start singing away. And then people realize, "Oh, this is good. You just sing, and it's just a soothing process." And we were like, "Oh, okay, it's good."
Did they join in? Or did they just sit there shocked?
They were just sitting and listening because I was singing Micronesian songs. Uh-huh. Yeah. We were just singing away all night. And then the rakia came out. And people were like, "It feels like we're partying." Like, yes, we have to. We're celebrating her life. Yeah.
You said your girlfriends took you out of it. When I checked you out, and come on, we're the Facebook generation. You got some friends that party hard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a lot of girlfriends. I have girlfriends that are, I call it positive partying, because we just go out, spend time together, and with alcohol, of course, not a lot.
Define a lot.
Yeah, we all have our own definition of a lot, but not a lot. That's what I have for. Right after Katalaya, that's where I met my girlfriends. And one of them, her name is Suntitsa. Suntitsa, which literally means sunshine. And she was like, "You know what, let's go." So she started taking me out. We started going out, hanging out. She introduced me to her friends, and then friends of friends. And then we made this group, like, of girls where now it's different. Now I have people to talk to. Now I have my own friends. Because before I had only Vuk's friends. Now I made my own business, which is really special to me, because now I have my people. I have people to run to complain, to shout my head off, to just release stress off. And that's one thing that also helped me a lot, to live here peacefully, to go through day, because I know, like, I have people. If I have problems, I know who to call, and they will always be there.
So another Micronesian similarity.
Similarity, yes. Another Micronesian. I have my people. I have my clan, my tribe.
We're sat in this restaurant. So how did it come that Sheila arrives here?
That also, one of my friends, her name is Diana. Diana, she's among the best artists in Banja Luka. Diana, she did the interior design, the paintings on the wall that you see here, all the paintings around, she did all this painting. And while she was working here, I came out, I passed by, you know, "Hey, while you're working, let's hang out." "Sure, why not?" So I came and I looked, I was like, "What are you working? What is this?" And she said, "Oh, it's a restaurant. It's a new opening restaurant, healthy food restaurant." It's like, "Do you know the owners?" "Yeah, I know. I'm working for them right now. I'm painting their restaurant. Of course I know the owners." Call them up. Ask them if they need worker.
You did what?
Yeah, I call the owners. If you know them, call them. Ask them if they need workers. I would like to work in their restaurant. She called them up. She called Boris and Marina, and she told them, "Oh, I have my friend. Her name is Sheila. She's from Micronesia." And, of course, they don't know where that is. "She's from Micronesia, and she's asking me if you need workers." And as soon as they heard that, I was like, I have a darker complexion. They're like, "Oh, that would be really good." They're like, "Sure, why not?" Next day, I went to interview, and then I started working with them at Zeleno Naruchi. That's where they had a really small restaurant. It's like a takeaway restaurant delivery, where they deliver also healthy food. And I started working there with them for 3 or 4 months till this Zen opened up, and I was among their first workers in the restaurant.
looking around here, it is super modern. It's super European. It's if I didn't see that the menu on the chalkboard was in Serbsky, and if I didn't look out and see the obvious Banja Luka skyline of concrete. But it's amazing.
It is. We had a group of the designers are also from LU Architect. Those are also... It's basically, the owners had their friends who are architects, their painting friends. It's just their friends that helped them make the restaurant look the way it is now.
It's super modern, and it's serving food that is quite... Can I say anti-Balkan? It's not meat-loaded, no, for a start.
For one thing, we have no red meat in the restaurant. We only have chicken and turkey. And, of course, seafood. Those are the only meat. A lot of people, when they come in here, they're like, you don't have meat? And I was like, no, but we have sarma. Meatless sarma.
Meatless sarma.
Meatless sarma. You can see other word. Veggie sarma.
Sarmageddon has actually come to Zen as well.
Yes. Yes. We... and. It's quite amazing. Now, when people taste it, first, people are cautious. I would say cautious, going, no, I don't want to taste it. That sounds disgusting. Something without meat. I personally know my husband, when there's no meat, he eats not food. He eats meat with meat.
And a side order
and
of meat.
A side order of meat, yes. But then I guess we're still, it's not only meat that you need to eat. You have other dishes that can supplement all the nutrition that you need for your body, which are not only meat. For example, now we have tofu. Not a lot of people in the Balkans know what tofu is. Not a lot of our customers, when they come and they ask, what is tofu? We have tofu burger. You have a burger without meat? Yes, it's called tofu burger. Then we have to explain to them what tofu is, what seitan is, the variety of, like our cakes. We have a lot of sweets that are also without eggs, with their veggie, without eggs, milk, non-gluten. And people they're still adapting to it. And it's coming along, I would say. We're really getting a lot of good customers and good comments about our meals. So.
I was talking to the celebrity chef of Banja Luka, Predrag Tošić, about introducing new food. Somebody contacted me on YouTube and said, David, I'd like to open... He was from India. And he said, I'd like to come and open an Indian restaurant. I had to say, wouldn't plan on doing that in the next 5 years. Mm. Because Predrag was telling me that people from Banja Luka and people from the wider Western Balkans are very reluctant to change.
Yes.
Having said that, when we came in here today to talk to you, you said, shall we go upstairs? And it was packed.
Yes. It's every on our really good days, people are just waiting outside for
you have lineup?
Yes, we have lineup. But and we have people calling for reservations, like, on the very good days, people call it, and then we'll say, okay, you can come in, but you have to wait for free seats. We have no free seats. And also, the good thing about this restaurant, we have a lot of kids who are allergic to gluten. We have non-gluten bread. We have non-gluten dishes. I would say we have a lot of things that people of different dietary can get from us, which is a good thing. And we have diabetics. A woman actually a couple of nights ago, she came and was like, thank you for having this. I haven't had a sweet, like a cake, just a cake, a slice of cake. I've had it for 5 years. And she came and she had cake here, because we have sugar-free cakes. We use from stevia, from coconut sugar, and agave syrup, and dates. That's how we... Those are the sweeteners we used in our cakes. And thank you very much. For 5 years, I literally had no sugar, nothing sweet. I was like, come on in. We have everything you need right here.
You're saying about coke. Let's get it right. Your part of the world, a lot of coconuts. Do you miss them?
Day.
Real ones?
No. I don't like coconuts.
Come on. You're joking. Come on.
No, I'm not. I don't like it. Rafael, you have to. I was like, no, thank you. I don't like it. Any sweets with coconut, I don't like it. I don't get it. Not for me.
So you're working here. You're front of the house. But there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes, making all these super dishes and everything. How did that sort of, or did it not affect you to get to the place where I saw you on television. How the heck did you get on a celebrity cookery show on television?
I applied.
Did you know somebody that rang up?
No, one of my colleagues. She works in the kitchen. One of the cooks. She asked me one day, Sheila, would you like to go on Look Illy Med? That's the name of television. I'm like, sure, why not? I didn't even know what that was. Until 2 weeks later, I realized that's a television show. I was like, what the hell, are you crazy? I'm not going to go on television. And she's like, let's go, let's just go try it out. I was like, oh, what the heck, let's go. Let's try it out, whatever. We actually just went on to have fun, to do something different. We didn't go for the money. Susanna, my colleague, she was like, yes, we went for the money. But I didn't went there. I just went to try something different.
What was the experience like? Cooking at home, cooking in a restaurant is one thing. Doing preparation and all the rest with all your neighbours, those gang of girls, and everybody else looking at you, the stress must have been awful.
No, I was a born superstar. I'm kidding. No, it was. I don't know. That's nothing special. It's just...
It would be special to me if somebody said, you go and look Illy Med.
Yeah, one morning I was walking to work, actually, and right behind me was an older woman walking her dog. And I was walking, she was like, hey, Sine! Hey, Sine! I was like, okay, is someone talking to me? And I looked back and she was like, were you on look Illy Med? I was like, yeah, I was! Like, everybody, I guess everybody, Banja Luka is small. It's a very small community. It's a very small city. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody watches the same. We don't have a million of television shows. We just have alternative. It's quite logical that everybody here would see. And I guess I'm not every day they see a Micronesian on their television. It was not quite an experience, but it was okay. I laughed through it.
Yeah, I know you did. Has that helped a lot to widen your circle of acquaintances even more?
Yeah, but I am a very I am a very positive person. I am a very energetic, and I talk to everybody. Before the show, I already had half of the town. I knew everybody already. That from the boys' school, I made friends at the school, like the elementary school, with a lot of the mothers there. And through the restaurant, I met a lot of people. Even before the television show, I already knew quite a lot of people here in Banja Luka.
You've come halfway around the world with your husband, having met in China. Wow, that's an adventure. Then you come to a country where you don't understand the language, you get that right. That's another adventure. Then you meet the gang of girls, which is another adventure. Now you've been a TV star. You work here in this restaurant. So what's next for Sheila?
I don't know. Well, I guess we'll go on that English cooking show you guys have there. What's it English? The cook's name? What's his name?
No, Gordon Ramsay. You're not going to go into Devil's Kitchen.
That would be quite an adventure. Imagine him cursing every single minute.
Oh, but you could curse back with a J word.
Oh, you... I'm kidding. Who knows? I don't really look ahead. Yes, I do. What's going to be tomorrow? But I don't plan. I don't plan anything, which can be, sounds stupid. Like, you have to plan, you have to make it. But no, I don't plan anything. I don't plan anything.
But you are going to take the boys back home, as you said. What sort of preparation will you have to do? Because, like, when you arrived here in the snow and going, where have I come to? It could be a rerun in a way for them.
Yeah, luckily they go to the seaside every summer. The boys, they go to Montenegro to the seaside with their grandparents every summer. So I don't know. But they're 8 years old. They go on YouTube by themselves and they go through all the tropical islands in Micronesia. And every time they see darker skinned people on YouTube, they're like, is he Micronesian? Is this how they look? Is this how they dress? And I was like, yes, they are. I've introduced to them actually the islands and how it looks like. The dance, especially the dances back home, like they would watch it and they're like, oh wow, like, I want to dance. I want to climb a tree. I want to do this. And it's like, okay, you will get a chance. They're actually excited about it. They're excited about going to Micronesia, and I was like, don't worry, mommy is working on it. We'll go one day.
The cultural things such as traditional clothing and, yeah, singing and dancing is pretty unique for the Western Balkans from where I come from in the United Kingdom. And they're seeing this on YouTube. When you take them back, you're not going to make them do kolo.
Kolo? I'll probably make myself do kolo. Yeah, I dance kolo pretty well, I would say.
Really?
Yes, I do. I've learned that too. So I'll probably go to Micronesia dancing kolo.
When I get back after finishing this trip here today, one of the things that I've planned to do is to get onto YouTube and to find some music from Micronesia. Did the boys sing Micronesian songs?
No, but we listened. We listened to Micronesian songs.
So at home you have that music?
Yeah, I have music. I have some. I played some songs from back home.
What do your neighbors or the gang of girls sing when you're doing that?
I don't know. They would just say, you know what, Bushman, they call me Bushman. Yeah, you know what, Bushman? Yeah, they call me Bushman. Bushman kind of like come back to reality. Get out of your Bushman world. Is it there? My girls are crazy. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Sheila, it's been really cool talking to you today. I think you're quite a brave woman to have done this. Go back 20 years to Micronesia. Where you are today must have been the furthest from your wildest dreams.
Oh, I'm in Bosnia. It's just halfway around the world. Yeah, I never saw myself coming to Europe. I always wanted to go to Greece, though. Since fifth grade, I was always, you know what, I want to go to Greece. I want to see the Parthenon. I want to see everything. I want to go to Athens, Sparta, all that. I want to go. Bosnia, it's not that far. But to see myself in Bosnia 20 years ago, no.
I've taken up enough of your time, but the final question is the one that normally, I think the longest response I've had to this question has been a pause of 2.5 minutes. Okay. That's a long pause, so please don't try and break the record today. When you think of the future, and I know that you said that you live for today and you compartmentalize everything and life is and everything else. If you could have one dream, what would it be?
If I have one dream, what would it be?
Only one dream, what would it be? Something for the future.
Something for the future, okay. I don't know, I just dream for good life for my children, that's it. I'll dream of a better life for my children. I'm not saying that the life right now is bad, but a better life, a better community. That they don't go through the bad things that I went through. For myself, I don't dream about myself anything. I'm okay. How am I like? I'm okay. I don't complain about my life. But just for a better life for my children.
Sheila, I have to say, without exception, you're the most bubbliest, happiest person that has been on this podcast. And for that, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David. It's been a pleasure.
And that's a wrap for this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed finding out a little more about both Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. If you've enjoyed this journey as much as we enjoy bringing it to you, please take a moment to leave us a review and subscribe to our podcast. Your feedback helps us tremendously and makes a huge difference. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.